right, glad you're with us. And we're not talking a lot about it, really, but we are 208 days from the ultimate jury, and that is you, the American people, going out to vote and how this will all go down. James Carville thinks it's a slam dunk Donald Trump will be reelected. I don't believe until the votes are counted. A big push by the Democrats to push mail voting, which lends itself to corruption and fraud, and nobody wants to hear that. You're denying people the right to vote. No, not at all. But I think you should be a citizen if you vote. And I think, like everything else, like, for example, if you go to a Democratic National Convention, and I guess they've pushed it back to August, we'll see if it happens at all, but isn't it interesting? You need IDs to get in, pictures of and IDs to get in these things. And pretty amazing. But that's how it works. The media has never been worse. I mean, the mob is what the mob is, and it is. They have been so grotesque and political and virulent in their hatred of all things Donald Trump, even in the middle of a national emergency pandemic. At one point, one of the daily briefings, the president said, well, can you just like put this aside for a little bit? It's not going to happen. This defines them. This is who they've been. This is who they will always be. They hate Donald Trump. Okay, we got the message. I've actually put together a whole pile of scare stories, is what I'm calling them. I mean, the stuff you read, they would make it that nobody's ever going to leave a bubble. To me, it's irresponsible, some of it, but we'll let you decide that too. I'll report it. This WHO leader, so arrogant in the things he's saying to the president in our country, and what we gave them $450 million, and they end up being the propaganda ministers for the communist Chinese and their cover up of this virus. The UK study saying 95% of this carnage and this mess could have all been prevented had they just been honest with the world and invited the world's scientists and doctors and researchers. We could have contained this thing there in Wuhan province, and they didn't let it happen. It's unbelievable. All right, we have our facts without fear. We have our medical update. How do we now transition at some point? Now, we're not there yet. We expect, I was just looking at Bill Hemmer's, if you look at the models, if the models hold true, based on where we are now, as Cuomo even said it yesterday, it's sad. It's every death, every life is precious. It just is. And it defines who we are as a people. But it seems like that is the lagging indicator, and we expect the leveling is probably in the process of happening now in New York, and even seeing signs of it, Louisiana, some other places, I hope. And then you see a precipitous decline. Now, then it creates a whole bunch of new challenges. And that is, how do we get this country up and going again as quickly as possible? Now, look, we want our store shelves filled. If you shut down the country, okay, you can't stop farmers, you can't stop packers, you can't stop truckers, you can't, I mean, there's a whole lot that we all take for granted. We go into grocery stores and we think, oh, here's our meat. I kind of have lived around the country. I've lived 5 years in Rhode Island and 5 years in California, 2 years in Alabama, 4 years in Georgia. And it is funny, I know many people that think, oh, they have no idea where the meats in their stores come from or where the fish in their stores come from. It comes from the ocean. Well, okay, but you get my point. There is a lot of steps that are taken to fill our grocery stores by a lot of different people. Now, I know people panic at different times. We saw this early on in the coronavirus, you know, when it was beginning to, I guess, set in that what's happening. The reality is, you know, you have a hoarding problem at different points. That has been solved. America's grocers have done a phenomenal job. So have America's truckers. But we want the store shelves full. Well, you need workers to do that. You need to keep the economy open to do that. I'm making this very simple to make a point. We want our pharmacies stocked with the medicines we might want or need in the middle of a pandemic. So they have to be open. That means the drug manufacturers have to be open. That means the raw materials have to be gathered to put these things together. We absolutely need and want the medical equipment for those on the front lines and in putting their lives on the line, protecting us, the doctors and the nurses and the medical professionals and you know, right down to the janitors that work in hospitals, all putting themselves at risk. They've got to have the right equipment. We all have to eat. We all want our medicine. It's a lot. You know, I said this yesterday. How do we reopen the economy? What is the best way to reopen this economy and reopen it safely? It's not going to be as challenging an issue in a less densely populated area. That's just a fact. It's going to, because there's natural, if you want to use the term, social distancing that is going on. But in a city like New York, it is a hell of a lot more challenging. You have this tiny geographical area. Take a look at New York City. It's not that big. And then you know, add 11 million people in the middle of that, and so many people work there. Now, as Dr. Oz has said, it's not a question of if. It's when there will be rebounds. All right, so we did exactly what they told us to do. We have 21 days. It's April the 9th. 21 days now. We're gonna run into May 1st. And the social distancing issues, et cetera, that the government has been recommending that we've followed through on, which is now that will then be the end of 45 days and 22 days. So how is it going to be possible to open up these office buildings and open up a city as large as New York City with the highest concentration of people in the smallest geographical area? It's challenging to do it right and to do it safely. Now, there might be some people that want to keep everybody from home. Now, look, our lives are going to forever be changed. Dr. Fauci on the U.S. after coronavirus, he said, look, there are going to be lessons learned here. And one of them is compulsive hand washing. Another one of them is you don't ever shake anybody's hands. Elbowing, I call it the hand of the elbow. Which we do in martial arts, a lot of elbows. But that's going to be our future. For a period, I would imagine that gloves and masks are still going to be used just out of an abundance of caution, especially in highly concentrated areas, populated areas. So I think that is going to be a part of it as well. And I know it's going to be a transition. We're going to have to work through it. Telemedicine is going to be a big part of this. Just like I've been saying, these are transformational times. I mean, I don't think travel bans are going to be called xenophobic, hysterical, and fear-mongering in the future. I think Purell is, if you're a corrupt senator that got tipped off in the beginning of this and sold your stock, probably would be a good bet to buy Purell at this point. By the way, the stock market has made a huge rebound all in the last week and a half. I mean, it has been amazing to watch. Not quite back to where we started, but very close. Meaning, obviously, there's confidence now in the markets that we're going to get through this and we're going to reopen the economy. And clearly, their seal of approval of the president's actions regarding this. I'm getting nervous at the amount of monies that we're talking about here when we still haven't gotten the $2.2 trillion in the hands of those Americans through no fault of their own that have been displaced from work and small business owners. Listen, we got to keep these guys up and going. But we got to get back to work as quickly and as safely as possible. Do I have all the answers? I do not have all the answers. But certainly things are going to change. You know, public-private partnerships, that is going to be the future. Telemedicine will be the future. People not uncomfortable wearing masks and gloves will be the future. Not shaking hands will be the future. Travel bans will be the future. FDC regulations, off use, compassionate use, right to try is the future. All of that, you know, Zeke Emanuel, you know, calling on a shutdown for the country for another 18 months till we get a vaccine. We won't have a country at that point. So, and this guy is advising the Biden campaign. How many businesses can survive with zero customers for 18 months? And it's not, you can't just print the money. The money's got to come from somewhere, and it's real money and it's real debt that we're taking on here. So as I think that we're going to have to accept other changes. Now, to navigate the opening of a big city like New York, you got a lot of factors. All right, let's say first and foremost amongst them would be, okay, safety. We don't want people getting sick. We don't want coronavirus rebounding. So how do we do that? Well, and then how do you balance that with civil liberties and constitutional rights? I know there would be people who would love to create a big government database of our health. I believe in health privacy. I'm sorry. It's none of your darn business whether somebody had COVID-19 or not. But I think a lot of it is going to be rooted in testing. And the big challenge is going to be, how do you do it? And I think one of the hardest businesses going forward that we want to open up, and I have so many friends in the restaurant business, and even with delivery and pickup, they're not doing great. I'm doing everything I can do to order more food without getting too heavy because I want to say hello to my buddies, support their businesses, and I'm doing it. The answer, I know, I'm looking at the Abbott ID COVID-19 test. It's called Abbott ID Now, and that's the test that delivers positive results in as little as 5 minutes. The test delivers negative results in 13 minutes when the virus is not detected. That compares to with at least 45 minutes to several days to get the other tests. Now the question is, let's say, again, we want people to be able to go to work and go to work safely and securely and not be a risk to themselves or their neighbors. All right, well, let's see. I'm very interested in Dr. Oz and Columbia Presbyterian's doing a study. NYU Langone is doing a study about patients that have been taking a lupus medication, hydroxychloroquine, and those with rheumatoid arthritis. And we've gone over that. I have a lot of updates on that today. But is it possible to test if we could produce enough tests? What this does is how this works. Full test takes 15 minutes. All right. They're doing 50,000 a day. So you want to open a city like New York, every building. Now, it works. Molecular testing technologies detect the presence of a virus by identifying a small section of the virus genome, then amplifying that portion until there's enough for detection. And a sample is added. Then a chemical solution cracks open the virus, releasing the genetic material for the ID now to read. And thanks to technology behind molecular testing, if even a small amount of COVID-19 is found in a sample, they'll be able to pick it up. Now the question is, can you get enough testing? Can they've now ramped up production of 50,000 ID now COVID-19 tests per day. They began distributing it to those states hardest hit. By the end of, April 3rd, they had 190,000 rapid tests to customers in 21 states. They expect to be able to produce 2 million tests per month. Is there any way we can make it 10 million? In other words, so that every building in New York, you can have all the people that work in that building, a lot of high rises. I work in two high rises that you give appointments. They go in waves. You protect their privacy. They get the test. Then you know the building's going to be clean. Now, that may sound intrusive. Now, you got to do it with complete medical privacy. No databases. You just need to know for the sake of other people there. You give people a number. This is your number. And then you siphon through all those people. But you're also going to allow other people to work from home. So it's still a little more distant than it was beforehand. I think that's going to be one of the keys to getting a city like New York up and running and doing it safely and preventing people from getting this and preventing the rebound, which would result in another shutdown, because we can't have that. We need this country up and running. Again, more complicated in a city like New York than even a city like Los Angeles, or more complicated than a more rural area with less concentration of people. So how do we mass produce the great and frankly genius, innovative Abbott test? I mean, that's the one in 5 minutes. If you're positive, COVID positive, you'll know in 5 minutes. Negative result, 13 minutes. But and they're producing massive quantities of this. I mean, they're going to be able to send out, what, a million test. Well, as of now, earlier this week, they had already shipped more than 190,000 rapid tests to customers in 21 states. And they now have a goal. They believe that they're going to be over 2 million, be able to produce about 2 million tests per month. How could we quadruple that? Now, I know. Listen, I'm not saying this that Abbott is doing anything but helping. I got this from Dr. Oz, who joins us later. He said Germany's mortality rate is much lower because of widespread testing. 500,000 tests a week. They like the, you know, the scenario of they are just testing everybody. Now, you got to test, but you got to have privacy. No violating civil liberties or constitutional rights. Now, you're going to add the other things, masks and gloves and distancing and teleworking and so on and so forth. That's got to be a part of it, especially in a big city. Got to get the economy going. Got to get this country up and running. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. Dr. Oz sent this to me that Germany's mortality rate, I had not picked this up on my own, and he just sent it before the show, is much lower because of widespread testing. Well, that fits into everything I was planning to talk about today in terms of how do we open up the economy. It's not going to be as hard in less densely populated areas because you have a natural built-in social distancing that you can. And then, again, things are going to change dramatically going forward, assuming doctors are right, knowing past practices, that we will have a rebound. It's not if, when. It's going to happen. Everybody needs to understand that. If everybody understands that, everyone adjusts accordingly. Again, it can be done and people will be able to work. Okay, gloves will still be a part of the future. That means Dr. Fauci's right. No more handshaking. That's done too. Elbowing will be the future. Masks, gloves, et cetera, social distancing, all those things. But then you'll add in the new things like teleworking. You know what? What I'm learning from my business is my people work for me. They work just as good from home. They really do. I have a great team of people, and I don't care who stays home when, just as long as the job gets done. And there's certain crucial key people that need to be in, but I think we might even eventually be able to work that out. Although it's less fun. I mean, Linda, we actually finally put a microphone in her house, right? How's it work? This is our first test. We're going to do a live test. Go ahead.
I think it sounds good. What do you think?
I think the line sounds great. I mean, distancing
so far,
radio.
So good. I'm keeping Liam out of the room. That's hard.
Well, I will say you are the most, how do I say this in a nice way? Of all the people that work for me, work on my shows.
This is going to be good.
Uh-huh.
Of all the people, you are the only one that refuses to take my direction. Because I gave you directions. Don't come into work. You have a sick family member, and you have a four-year-old kid. We don't need you here.
Can't lead your team from behind. Can't do it.
Okay. Yes, you can, because I'm leading from behind.
No, you can't.
I'm in a whole isolated room that gets antiviraled on occasion, apparently. I didn't even know
Well,
that.
We really need you to be in a bubble. Otherwise, none of us work.
Listen, remember, we also got to remember the other big picture is 80%+, whatever it is, of people that get this, no symptoms, mild symptoms, or just regular flu symptoms. It doesn't become life-threatening. And
listen,
you know,
I'm being careful. The team is being careful. We're staggering, and we're all doing our best.
See, the part that you're not saying is I told you to do something, and you're the only one on the team that refuses to listen to me. Everybody else that works for me listens to me. So you're home today for once. You can listen to me. Now, Ethan, I know you're always sucking up to Linda, but did I not tell her to stay home every day? Yes, I did. You know, in some places that would be called
insubordination. Was that a rhetorical question?
Yeah, I mean, that would be called like insubordination. And what am I? It's sort of like, am I going to fire you for wanting to stay on the job, do your job, et cetera, et cetera? No, we have masks. We have all these things for people, and we're trying to, believe me, aren't we antiviraling the studio and on a pretty regular basis,
right? We are electrostatic cleaning the studio. It's
after every show at Fox, they're going in and wiping it down with antivirals because there's buttons other people have
to
push.
Katie and I are wiping down. Everybody's doing their part.
Everyone's doing their part. All right. Well, the line sounds good. All right. So,
cool.
Here's the thing. Look, I'm not going to bore you. I know more about this Abbott ID now COVID-19 test. I love it. I love that they're talking about bringing on 2 million tests per month. But if we're going to get the economy safely up and running, and a key word here is safely, some in the media, Sean Hannity says areas less affected by coronavirus could reopen. Now, Yeah, they could. That's absolutely a fact. And again, I wouldn't shake hands with anybody, and I'd keep the distancing thing up and the, you know, gloves and the mask stuff up, and that's all going to be fine. Look, everyone's got to remember, you want your store shelves full. People have to work. There's a whole supply chain of people working to make that happen for you. You want your grocery store shelves stocked. You want your pharmacy stocked. We want our medical, frontline medical people risking their lives every day. We want the medical equipment. Well, there's a whole supply chain to them, too. And so there's only so long we can go before everything starts to crack and nothing's going to be in any store because nobody's working. We got to open it up to the extent that we can, because that then becomes a threat for people in numerous ways. The people that are making the ventilators and the N95 masks and the gowns and the gloves and the shields, yeah, we need all those people right now. But you got to do it safely. But there's a way to do it. I think the answer is in testing. And Abbott now, to their credit, their great innovation, their hands-on approach has come up with a way that, you know, if you want to open a city like New York, you're going to have testing. Now, all right, so let's say our radio building or my TV building, two different high-rises in New York. So what do you do to get people in there? Well, first off, you got to figure out who's essential and who can work from home. And that helps keep distance. There's a start. Those people that go in, you can put a mask on them, you can put gloves on them, and people can work. That's step two. Step three is you don't want anyone that is COVID-19 positive getting in the building. So if you have enough machines, you roll out a period of time, one group of people comes in, another wave of another group of people come in, and slowly you start testing people, then you go back and test them again. That would be in a way that you can get the economy up and running, but we got to have enough tests. And Abbott's doing great, but we probably need, you know, 10 times what they're able to do, which is 2 million a month, which is pretty amazing. And again, you'll know in 5 minutes. So anyway, that is going to be where it's going to be. Now, look, I'm sure there are some medical professionals that probably would say something to the effect that, well, if we're really going to save every life, we should stay in this shutdown mode forever. We can't afford as a country to stay in the shutdown mode forever. It will impact, or we are already impacting the economy in ways that we're stretching it in ways that have never been stretched before. That's why when they keep talking about more stimulus money or infrastructure money, my head explodes. Mnuchin says the economy could reopen in May, but maybe not every aspect of it. He was on with Jim Cramer, I guess, in CNBC. And he said, if the doctors let us, we could be open for business in the month of May. Okay, so I do. I think that once the president feels comfortable with the medical issues, everything necessary that American companies and workers can be open for business. Now, what I've not been able to figure out in my head, and I said earlier, I don't have all the answers, I don't know how you're going to pull it off at restaurants. I don't. And that is how are you going to pull it off so the NBA can play? I guess they're asking players to take a 50% pay cut when they're not having any revenue being brought in. What are we going to do for concerts? What entertainment? Very important. I don't know the answer. Because, again, you don't want a database. I don't think Americans are not going to give. They're not going to ever go for that, nor would I ever go for it. I'm too much of a libertarian and it's not necessary, but maybe there is a license, you get a little star tested within the last month. I don't know that you put on your license after you get an anonymous test result back or an antibody test back. That could be part of it too, but I just don't know the way. It's restaurants, arenas. That's going to be hard. At least get the rest of the economy. And Americans, you can feel the panic and desperation everywhere. Medical Journal, they calculate about 0.66% of people that contract the virus will die, much lower than earlier forecasts. How these forecasts were so wrong, I don't know. I really don't. But certainly the mitigation efforts. I am more convinced every day, the travel ban and quarantine and then subsequent travel bans did more to prevent this country from a far more challenging, difficult time than any one decision Donald Trump made in his presidency. For these idiots in the mob and the media, like the New York Times telling us in February, oh, it's fine, don't worry about it. Just you can go out and who says you can't travel to China? Yeah, that would have been bad advice. Or the idiots at the Washington Post. I mean, the mob and the media is just atrocious. They cannot stop themselves. They won't stop themselves. You got now one bizarre conspiracy theory after another, one political attack after the other. Now the conspiracy channel, MSDNC, now has a bizarre conspiracy that, you know, what he described as a cynical interpretation. I think this guy desperately wants to be the head conspiracy theorist at MSDNC. Chris Hayes is trying to out Rachel Maddow in terms of conspiracy theories. He now retweets a video in which Trump is seen talking to reporters about projected U.S. death toll, also known as COVID-19. If we can stay substantially under 100,000 U.S. deaths, which was the original projection, I think we did a good job, the president says. He then shares the interpretation that the 100,000 figure may have been deliberately inflated. The most cynical interpretation of this, one I can't quite bring myself to accept, as they rolled out the modeling showing 100,000 deaths after they knew it would be less than that, so they could anchor everyone to that number. Well, the number was actually 2.2 million or higher. You know, same stupid show. Fox News is a genuine public health threat. Well, we have the timeline of what I was saying. They were in the middle of impeachment obsession at MSDNC, the New York Times, the Washington Post, and fake news CNN. Yeah, but we still found time for Dr. Fauci, panels of doctors. It was me sounding the alarm even before the travel ban. We had Fauci on 6 days after the first known case of corona was identified in the U.S., and I kept going on. This bothers me because asymptomatic people, they can be asymptomatic for a long time. They're shedding the virus, and they're going to infect a lot of people. I was unfortunately right. I wish I was wrong. Hannity said it was a hoax. I never said the virus was a hoax. That's another media mob lie. They just lie with abandon. It is sick what they do. You know, Trump reopening the economy will be dependent. This is, again, MSDNC, the conspiracy channel. If he's going to win re-election, liberal Joe's lost it. Tens of thousands of people will die because of Trump's coronavirus incompetence. No, the only incompetence we see is from the media. And the other incompetence was in New York. Like when Andrew Cuomo was told, this is a foreseeable, predictable threat, but you will be 15,783 ventilators short. Donald Trump built all the extra hospitals, including the biggest in America, sent the Navy ship hospital. Donald Trump is even staffing them for New York. And now, subsequently, New Jersey's using some of these beds, which is great. We want to help out New Jersey. And he's the one that sent all the ventilators that they didn't order. So he was the guy that got more prepared to mobilize the nation and business in ways that had never happened before. I mean, it's just sick. You know, and then you got out there the likes of Wolfie Blitzer, Dr. Wolf. I guess we should call him Dr. Wolf Blitzer. You know, does he think he knows a lot more than, the foremost expert on hydroxychloroquine, Dr. Wallace? The guy that has now pointed out it's a very safe drug that's been given to tens of millions of Americans since its approval in 1955, 65 years. It's dangerous. No, Dr. Wolf. As Mark Levin said, I read in a post on The Blaze, he says, we know the POTUS isn't a real doctor, just like we know you're not a real journalist. You know, here you got a guy that is the foremost expert, rheumatoid arthritis, and lupus, has 2,000 patients, all 42 years in practice, not a single patient ever hospitalized for hydroxychloroquine complications, not one. Then he deals with the specific risk of taking 400 milligrams a day following a single 600 milligram HCQ loading dose for 30 or 60 days. no treatment that is being used in the world now, it goes for 30 or 60 days. He said the risk is nil. And, you know, the worst case, you have a rash or an upset stomach. This guy knows more about this than anybody else on TV, and they don't want to listen to him because Donald Trump likes it. It's sad. It's pathetic. But we got to get this economy up and running. The mob and the media, I mean, they have not stopped their Trump hatred 24/7. Hate Trump. Hate Trump. Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon, the process of getting people back to work will be a slow and cautious one. This is where I say the answer will be in the testing. And that's where it's going to have to happen. If you want to open up a city safely like New York and you want to get the city up and running. The other thing, I'm not going to, I can't figure out air travel either for people. There's going to be a lot more, a lot less business travel, and people are going to, you know, get on their iPhones and FaceTime a lot more. That's all I could really think of. Not ideal, but it's, you know, we got to keep the economy going. We want to keep workers working. You know, we have the ability, the foundation to do it. If Washington just stops now, let's see how the $2.2 trillion, the $4 trillion the Fed has made available for loans. Let's see how that works first. They just want to spend more money. We don't know the impact of all of this yet. All right, Dr. Oz, how do we safely, from a medical standpoint, open like a big city like New York? How can that get done? All right, glad you're with us. Hour two, Sean Hannity Show, toll free. It's 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. Some good news. Boris Johnson has now been taken out of ICU. That's good news. New York's corona hospitalizations dropped to their lowest level since the crisis began. That's good news. You know, for all the people attacking me, March 2nd, arrogantly, Andrew Cuomo was out there. Ugh, we're not going to have the same results. We're in New York.
Our arrogance as New Yorkers. I speak for the mayor also on this one. We think we have the best healthcare system on the planet right here in New York. Amen. So when you're saying what happened in other countries versus what happened here, we don't even think it's going to be as bad as it was in other countries.
March 2nd. Hannity, well, what was I saying? I interviewed Fauci January 27th. I interviewed him. I had a doctor panel on the 28th. I was talking in all through late January and early February about asymptomatic people walking all over the place, shedding this virus. This is bad. Said it right then. Hannity called it a hoax. No, I never did. And I have a timeline with the video and audio available. We're moving away a little bit from hydroxychloroquine, but the French president met with the guy that Professor Raoult, who's the guy that did the 1,000-person test there. That is good news. It's sort of a non-issue for me because I think the definitive statement on hydroxychloroquine not being dangerous came from Dr. Daniel Wallace. Dr. Oz interviewed him on his show, and he joins us now. Let me first, before I get into, I think testing being the answer to getting the country up and open again, even big cities like New York, you know, you have this intersection of politics and medicine. And I don't think it's good for doctors at all. In other words, if I was going to say it a particular way, I think that it's, you know, I think the key thing, are you concerned about science being politicized? Because I am.
Oh, without question. And in my whole career, I've never quite seen it like this. I mean, this is the world you travel in. Within medicine, look, we beat each other up. We have mortality, morbidity conferences where we just go at each other. And we're thoughtful about our criticism, but we're pointed in it because people die when we make mistakes. But a lot of times in this current debate, it's not based on facts. It's, I heard that it's dangerous. You heard that it's dangerous. The other person told me it was dangerous. Hearsay begins to dominate. And folks don't appreciate that when a lot of patients come to you saying, hey, I just heard this is really dangerous, or the opposite, it actually undermines this precious covenant that doctors and patients have. And it also chills the debate that doctors are supposed to have. I see people arguing with each other about what their perspectives are politically, and then the arguments about the science follow. That perverts the foundation of this process. And it doesn't serve a public that is already confused, desperately needing help. And no one's claiming they have all the answers. There's a ton of COVID solutions out there, dozens of them, many promising. Some of them you sort of have a gestalt will work, others you don't. But we should be laser focused on getting answers. And when we don't know for sure, what's our best guess? Because that's what medicine's about. Inadequate data is almost present in the decision, almost always. So you've got to make a decision about whether you go left or you go right based on completely inadequate information. Sometimes it's good. Generally, it's not.
You know, look, I got to give you credit because you went out of your way. There were two tests done in France, and the more recent one included 1,000 people. And Dr. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, Raoult, I believe.
Yeah.
Unless you want to correct me, I have no problem with that.
Right.
But, you know, more importantly, you know, when I read the letter sent to the FDA by Dr. Daniel Wallace, I mean, this guy has been, he inherited the largest lupus practice in the U.S., has 2,000 patients under his care now. Most have and are taking HCQ. He's authored 400 peer-reviewed papers, written the principal lupus textbook, past chair of the Lupus Foundation of America, Rheumatology Research Foundation, and American College of Rheumatology. And he says, quote, HCQ, or Plaquenil, same thing, is a very safe drug. It's been given to tens of millions of individuals in the world since its approval 65 years ago in 1955. And he said, in 42 years of practice, no patient of mine has ever been hospitalized for an HCQ complication. And then he said the risk of taking the dose that we are talking about to deal with COVID-19 for 30 or 60 days, which nobody's prescribing, is nil unless you have a rash or an upset stomach. And then I turn on the TV and I see, you know, Dr. Wolf Blitzer or Dr. Humpty Dumpty saying it's dangerous and reckless. Why would I listen to them when these are the foremost experts in virology in the case of the guy in France and here in the United States at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles?
Because in America, as you know, you're either watching Hannity or you're watching whatever the competition is on CNN.
That's true.
And so you get the Hannity version of medical school or you get the CNN version of medical school. And the challenge for physicians is if you've understood what Dr. Wallace says, then you understand that there's always a risk, but it's a manageable risk, and a doctor, thoughtful physician who knows your story can prescribe it, and you're probably going to be okay. If you're watching someone who doesn't want the drug to work because they're rooting against the person who said it was good, then all of a sudden you're hearing a scenario where it makes you think, I'm not going to even ask my doctor. And as soon as it comes out of his mouth, I'm going to say no. And I'm saying this because I'm having physicians write me stories. I had a group write me that they have 100 patients to cardiology group. They say they've been observing patients on the treatment. They're not vouching for the treatment. They're just saying as specialists in the field of arrhythmias, irregular heartbeats, they haven't witnessed any problems that would even predict there'd be an issue. So I'm not, and no one should argue that it's not a problem. It's, is it a relevant problem? Is it enough of an issue that it should be a meaningful deterrent to your trying it if your doctor says it? That's it. And if you interfere with the doctor's advice to you, then there's some ramifications of that. And I think folks understandably can be critical of the president or have a political bias. That shouldn't make them biased against the science. It was interesting today because Raoult, this very well-known French doctor, he's controversial. But like a lot of big thinkers, I mean, this guy invented giant viruses. I mean, he discovered them, right? He's Q fever. He found one of the best solutions to it. He's really done some remarkable work. I think he's published, probably close to 1,000 papers. Right? And in the course of that, you make some enemies because you're doing a lot of things. But the French premier, Macron, met with him for, I understand, 3.5 hours today. So that doesn't mean he's endorsing this guy, but in fairness to the leadership of France, they decided to meet with this fellow because what he's doing, now he's up to 2,000 patients. He's only tabulated data on 1,000. He's only published on 80. So we're going to wait for the rest of it to accrue. He also, by the way, says he hasn't had any major complications. And again, as I mentioned, he's a pretty, very confident of himself. He scoffed at the idea of a major complication issue. He checks EKGs, by the way, at everybody. It sounds like he's a guy who's...
By the way, we would know by now if there were HCQ complications of any kind. We would know because it's being used all over the world. I don't want to waste all of our time, though, on this, but that is all important. So I want to be very precise in my language because people are just, this world I live in, no matter what you say, they want to destroy you. I want America to open up. We can't afford this. We can't. You had said to me, it's not a question if there's going to be a rebound. There will be. Now the question is, how do we open up the country? How do we open it up precisely safely so that people don't contract us. Now, as I said in the beginning of this show, and I said it last night, it's certainly more doable, probably areas that the country can open now because of natural social distancing. I think certain realities now are going to change in the country. Like Dr. Fauci said, no more handshaking. Yeah, that's probably our future. I think for the interim time, while the potential of rebounds happen, people will wear masks. People will be wearing gloves. The answer to me, though, is if you want to open up a city like New York, we are going to need testing. Now, Abbott, innovative, brilliant company, they now have the five-minute test that we've talked at length about. I won't go through it again. The HHS has purchased 1,200 of them. If every building in New York, and they're going to have 2 million doses a month that they'll be producing, they said. 2 million tests that they expect to have online a month. The question is, if you want to open up New York City, I think the only way you're going to do it, it's going to be partially some people still work from home. There's going to be gloves and masks involved, but there's also going to be in every building, if they could buy the tests and, you know, roll in with total anonymity, patient privacy, very important, protecting people's privacy, civil rights, civil liberties. But if you want to get in a building, you have to go through their testing process. You'll get results that day. You roll in X number of employees. Essential workers go in. Other workers work from home. And I think you can open the city up. What I can't figure out is how do you open up a restaurant? How do you open up the airlines? Take it from there. If I'm right or if I'm wrong, you tell me.
You're right. Let's just look at places where it's happened so we don't have to reinvent the wheel. So Germany has a much lower rate of mortality than surrounding countries, and they have a widespread testing program. Just to give you some numbers, their plan anyway right now is to do 500,000 tests a week. They have 80 million people in Germany, so that's, let's say, one-fifth the population of us, right? And so if you just take that sort of as a rough number, then, or one-fourth the population, we'll say, just to make the math easier, then we should be doing about 2 million tests a week. And we've done a total so far in America over the course of this illness of 2.3 million. So we're doing a lot of testing, but we're talking about a meaningful increase. Now, in Germany, they have this model, hammer and dance. What that means is you hammer the problems when they happen before they get too big. So it's like whack-a-mole, right? But it works. You hammer it down, and then you dance for a while, right? So the hammer is aggressive measures, heavy social distancing if required, shutting down of certain districts, but not the whole country, followed by a little dance, which is where you calibrate the effect of what you've done and have you changed the transmission rate. And then you go back and forth. That's going to be the hammer and dance scenario that we're using. Now, they're looking at something we will not tolerate in America. And it's controversial because remember the Germans are still worried. You know, they lived through Nazi Germany. They lived through the Stasi in East Germany. They are super sensitive to us, secret police and information, and it's fresh in their minds. So the government, despite that, still looking at tracking tools. But I think that technology can help us in a different way. There are some really clever ideas, temperature checking. There's an idea that I'm working on right now. You know, a lot of patients who have COVID-19 lose their sense of smell, right? They can't smell and they can't taste. I don't know if you
right.
do that.
I'm listening,
but,
yeah.
Right. So you could check that on street corners. I mean, I don't have to actually do anything all that invasive. I can quickly just check if your taste is the same. There are devices that are being looked at now. I just got one that I'm playing with, decide this information. So I'm going to keep pursuing it. But imagine if it's not just a finger stick or a nasal swab. Maybe there are other ways for us to do high-level, high-population screening. Because I'm assuming people want to be told if they're sick. So with that assumption, they're not hiding from us. We're actually looking for ways of helping them. So we may not want to put one in every building because people may not be comfortable going into a building. I don't know if a building wants sick people coming in there. But you can imagine street corners. Take advantage of some of the shops that have been vacated because of bankruptcies. Take advantage of space, public areas where you can't get Radio City Music Hall, right? And then put places in there. You know that if you're in a five-block radius of that Manhattan, you just run over there real quick, no appointment, get tested, results back in 5 minutes, and then walk out. That way we have enough machines, we can get enough strips, we can check your nose, we can check your mouth for taste, you can check your temperature, just quick screening. And then if you're positive, then we can take it to the next level. But we have to be willing as a society to do the follow-up. And that's going to require public service folks that are, you know, good do-gooders, but their job is to take this seriously. This is not a volunteer effort. And the
but
reason
do you
why
think,
I say that is...
I don't want to interrupt you, but I don't want to lose you either because I only have X number of seconds with you here.
Go ahead.
Do you think it's possible, if we produced enough of the tests, enough of the machines for the test, that every building in New York can be testing people? You know, you don't bring everyone in at once. You do it, you know, you roll it out. But to get in the building, you got to take the test. And when you're done testing all the people in that building, you go back and test everyone and keep doing it in a rolling way to prevent the rebound that is inevitable.
Eventually, but I'm worried that first of all, it's incredibly cumbersome, but the ergonomics of being able to test everybody multiple times is difficult. We're better off using smarter screening tools, things that we can use, technology can help us with, that picks out the people who are most at risk, identify them, and test them every time they walk in the building.
Like you do one of the temperature checks where you just hold the thermometer at the forehead, something like that. You think that's enough? Would that be safe enough?
Oh, that's a very, first of all, if you have a fever, you're contagious. If it's not from this, it's something else, right? I mean,
except
if you ran from the subway to get there and you're sweating because you were running. But
can people be shedding the virus and asymptomatic, even like we know with this virus, and be able to spread the virus and not know they have any problem at all and don't have a temperature?
Well, we think that's possible. Let's be honest about this. I mean, do we really know? We don't know if they're asymptomatic. No one's coming to us and saying, hey, I'm asymptomatic, I'm spreading the virus. We're assuming that's the case. But there's also the possibility that asymptomatic people, again, you don't even know when they're asymptomatic because they don't know when they're asymptomatic. Maybe the amount of virus they're shedding is less. It's possible. That's why they're asymptomatic. Right?
Yeah.
So, although I've heard the opposite, we don't know those answers for sure. We need rapid screening tools to make people feel comfortable that it's okay to go back in the water. But I'm going to just come back to one thing. We're going to have to get comfortable with people making us professionals when it comes to screening, because right now we're amateurs. An amateur hour got us where we are in New York.
All right, Dr. Oz, we'll have more on this. How do we open the country? How do you open a big city like New York as quickly and safely as possible? No, there's no simple answer here. How do you open a restaurant? I don't think movie theaters are going to be opening any too soon. How do you throw a concert? How do you open the airlines? It's going to be tough. Anyway, thank you, Dr. Oz. You've been amazing. Kevin McCarthy, I'm going to ask him this question when we get back. And China, how do we hold them accountable? Jason Chaffetz, Hannity tonight at 9. The great one, by the way, Mark Levin tonight, much more.
Now, do you think with this, there's a possibility, if the doctors let us, that we could be open for business in the month of May?
I do, Jim. I think as soon as the president feels comfortable with the medical issues, we are making everything necessary that American companies and American workers can be open for business and that they have the liquidity that they need to operate their business in the interim.
Who's the bigger threat to America's election security, Russia or China?
In my opinion, it's China. And not just to the election process, but I think across the board, there's simply no comparison. China is a very serious threat to the United States, geopolitically, economically, militarily, and a threat to the integrity of our institutions, given their ability to influence things.
That was Bob Barr, the Attorney General, along with Laura Ingraham, which was a pretty fascinating comment. 25 now until the top of the hour. 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. We're going to get into the issue of China and how they should be held accountable at the top of the next hour. One of the things, I really want to figure this out, because I'm getting very concerned about the sheer volume, the dollars that are involved. Now, I think most Americans, there is general consensus that without the travel ban, subsequent travel bans, remember the first travel ban with China was 10 days after the first identified case of coronavirus in the U.S. It would be so much exponentially worse had the president not made that xenophobic, hysterical, fear-mongering decision that Joe Biden called it at the time, and 2 months and 3 days later then endorsed. A little late, Joe, but it would have been so much worse. How many tens of thousands of Americans likely would have contracted this virus had the president not taken that bold step? It's incalculable. How many more Americans would have ended up dying? He wasn't taking it seriously. Well, the only people who weren't taking it seriously were the Democrats that were in the middle of their impeachment witch hunt. They were not talking about this. You know, Nancy Pelosi, the end of February. Oh, come to Chinatown. Hang out here. March 2nd, Andrew Cuomo arrogantly saying, oh, If you don't mind, I'm a New Yorker. And as a New Yorker, I can tell we're not like those other countries. Our medicine's so much better. Well, now it's better. No, but no thanks to you. You rejected your own task force recommendations for ventilators that you'd be short 15,783, then screaming at Donald Trump, send me ventilators. Well, that was even in your own report. They said that was your responsibility. Something, a foreseeable, predictable moment, peak week, this week, which it turned out, thankfully, we didn't need all of them. But the hospitals were built by Trump. They're being staffed by Trump. The medical equipment, including the ventilators and the N95 respirators and the gowns and the masks and the gloves and the face shields and everything in between, yeah, they all came from Donald Trump. And the many hospitals being built not only in New York but around the country. And the Navy ships being sent out. At least you get a thank you out of Gavin Newsom, who's been actually, you know, showing some pretty decent leadership for him, and I don't agree with him on much of anything. And as he pointed out, he's suing the president. He's got like 68 lawsuits against the president. But the main focus, I think, now is how do we get, rather than spending more money, how do we get the economy up and running? Now, as I've been, and how do you do it safely? How do you get people back to work, but do it in a way that's safe? So the predictable rebound is not going to result in another nationwide shutdown. Now, it's less challenging in more open areas where, number one, COVID-19 is not that prevalent a problem. There are parts of the country that's the case. Social distancing, well, based on the geographical spacing of people, it's a lot easier to do that. You can open parts of the country up right now. Now, if you want your grocery store shelves filled, you want your pharmacies filled, you got to have people all along the supply chain working. And it's not this big, endless well of money that the government is going to be able to provide. $2.2 trillion, these are uncharted waters. $4 trillion made available by the Fed in loans, that's uncharted. Now, when you get to the heavily concentrate, well, let's say small geographic areas with the highest concentration of people, how do you open New York City? Now, there's going to be new normals. We've been talking about this is a transformational period, how we deal with pandemics. I would say travel bans are going to be instantaneous. That'll be the norm. Quarantine, same thing. I think on issues involving public-private partnerships, same thing. Getting rid of FDA rules and regulations to help with treatments, and that would mean right to choose and decide on your own what medicine you and your doctor choose you want to take. Compassionate care. All of these things, all transformational. I think you're going to see telehealth be a big part of any real healthcare solution. But the answer to me lies in testing, and I've been talking all day about Abbott. They've done this incredible job. And they have 18,000 of these ID Now tests that are out there. It's called Abbott ID Now COVID-19 test. Now, you get positive if you have positive results in 5 minutes, negative results in 13 minutes. The great part is that they're going to be able, they expect to produce about 2 million tests per month. Now, the question is, if you want to open New York City, how vital can this testing be? And by the way, even if you're only bringing in essential employees for the time being, and teleworking is now, at least in the near future, going to be a part of reality, how do you get essential workers in and get them in safely and not have to worry about shutting down a city again? I think the answer is going to be testing. Anyway, GOP leader Kevin McCarthy is with us. Congressman, how are you?
I'm good, and I could not agree more with you. Think about for one moment, had the president not taken that action, that more Chinese would have been in America. The rest of the country would look like what New York is going through right now, unfortunately. I mean, he saved millions of lives. But you could take that one step further. Could you imagine what the world would look like had President Xi of the communist China did not lie to the rest of the world? 95% of this never would have happened. They lied to everybody, and it changed the course of history.
Well, I think, look, and we're going to get into this at the top of the hour. Here's the thing. I got to give a lot of props to, you know, all these companies, Quest Diagnostics, LabCorp, Walmart, Target, CVS, Walgreens. I mean, all of these great places. They've done a great job. And now Abbott came up with this incredible test. Now, there's about 18,000 of these units already in circulation. But how do we mass produce this? That to me would be the key.
Yeah, because this is what we have to start talking about. Put America back to work. And it maybe it's in waves, maybe it's in pockets, but that's where we have to get. Abbott now has a test that takes you less than 10 minutes. I actually took the test. It's envisioned like a Q-tip ringing around each nostril three times. I got the remittance. It goes into the machine, and it tells you in 10 minutes whether you're positive or negative. There are a number of machines already that are sitting in doctor's offices that from Abbott that test you, maybe you have strep throat or something. That same machine can be used already. They're making the parts right now, what, 50,000 a day? They're going to mass produce that, so you can test that. But there are another test coming forward, other companies, but Abbott has one too, a blood test. If you had already had this, you may have it and never had any symptoms, may not know that you had it, but as Dr. Fauci will tell you, you may be immune for a while. That's a workforce that can go back to work. So if we had, you're correct on testing, do the blood test. If these companies have this test within 10 minutes, they know you're safe, you go in, we could start part of the country back up by that way. These are the things you got to start planning for how you're going to start this country moving.
I think it could be a combination. Number one, you bring for businesses, let's stay with New York for a second, because that would be the most challenging area. 11 million people, smallest geographical area. Okay, so that would, to me, okay, if you identify in every New York building, who are the essential workers for that building? Then maybe, I know it sucks, but I mean, for a while, for a period, for time, you're going to, you know, the employees that do come in might want to wear gloves and masks. Social distancing, okay, because half the workforce is working from home and the other half is in the building. But if every building in New York could get one of these tests or 10 of these tests to make it go by faster, essential employees coming into the building. Okay, we have to protect their civil liberties, their medical privacy, their constitutional rights. But if they can do it anonymously, they get the test, they get the results. If it's positive, you're told go home. We'll talk to you again in 14 days. Go get the care that you need. But if not, you're filling the building up with people that are negative. Well, that would then open up even a city like New York. But you're going to need millions of these machines, and we don't have millions. How do we get them built quickly?
Well, that's where we got to work with Abbott and other manufacturers to be able to provide this and build this. The other thing you have to do is, if somebody is found positive, we've got to be able to treat them and put them, get them out of the area with everybody else. And technology allows us to do that with the same time protecting your civil liberties. I think that is something we need to look at as well. The testing, the removal and treatment of individuals so they don't multiply. We know how contagious this can be. I mean, look at the difference between New York and California. And we both have one of those Navy ships. You also can look between the governors. We both have liberal governors in these two states, but you've got Gavin Newsom, who is praising President Trump and Mike Pence on how well the federal government has worked with them. There are ways that we can open up certain pockets, I believe, if we do have the testing and do have the ability to remove somebody who is sick.
So here's the question I have. We can't afford, from my perspective, $2.2 trillion. These are uncharted waters. $4 trillion loans available, Fed. Again, uncharted waters. Now, with that said, we wanted to save lives. We rightly made that the priority. I don't disagree with any of that. We're going to make workers whole. We're going to get small businesses up and running. I think it's going to be far more challenging for the restaurant business, the club business, the entertainment business, sports, and the airline industry. But put that off to the side. You know, and I know people are talking about more money. We can't afford. How much more money can we afford, Congressman? Because right now we haven't even distributed the monies that we allocated.
No, and if you're looking, think of all the debt we already have, about the size of our entire economy. We are in a consumption economy. That's why we got to get the economy working again to go forward. You can't look to government to just keep writing it, because government doesn't create money. Government gets their money by taking it from all the taxpayers across this country. So the answer isn't to sit here and say, oh, I'm going to write another $2 trillion bill. Now, you're correct about what President Trump was able to accomplish now. Because we had to shut down, these small businesses are not getting income, so they do need a liquidity. They need that bridge to go forward. And what they're doing with the Paycheck Protection Plan that allowed providing the money to pay your employees, keep them hired, pay your rent and pay your utilities, that is going pretty well. There's a real need for it. But you know, did you watch?
Yeah, no one's disagreeing that we got to help these people. This is through no fault of anybody's, and I think people understand that. I don't think we could afford to go through this twice because we're going to have a rebound. That's right.
Yeah, but what the Democrats want to do, they want to change election law. They want to bring the Green New Deal in. They objected today to one page, not changing any policy, but providing more resources to small business. Why? Because they want to restructure government in their view. There is a Democrat congresswoman who thinks, no, we need checks going out to illegals and prisoners, inmates. They should be receiving money too. That is their answer to this economy, and that's not going to bring us back to the strongest economy in the world. We're fortunate to have President Trump, who built this economy, who will rebuild it back. And that's why we got to get us able to get back to work. Safe.
Do you think that Abbott, and I think they've done a phenomenal job and a great service to humanity, frankly, with this new test and innovation of theirs. Do you think it's possible to mass produce this? And if so, how quickly? You know, look, May 1st is going to be 21 days from now. 21 days. New York's not going to be able to open up in 21 days.
Look, the answer is we are Americans. So the answer is yes. We've got to get a couple people on here for Abbott. I know what they've been able to accomplish already. Think what they created. They created this test. They got it approved from an FDA that thinks differently now under President Trump. And remember what President Trump did a couple years ago. He got passed through Congress right to try. So you can try these new medicines, not wait 10 years if you're in dire need. You have the ability. You're going to take some risk, but you're going to save many more lives. They have done something that hasn't been done before. And I know the ingenuity of America and the compassion of it, we can get this done. And Abbott is an amazing company. I hope we're able to get somebody from that company on to explain it.
I'd like to praise them for what they've done. And now, and then I want to say, okay, how can we take your great innovation and use it as the single best tool to safely reopen the country, including a big city like New York? Now, I think it'll be a combination of factors. Some people will be working from home, essential workers coming in. But if every building had the capacity to, and ensuring people's medical privacy, ensuring people's constitutional rights, civil liberties, but identifying those that might have COVID-19, tell them, okay, this is where you go to get help. If you don't have a doctor, this we'll send you to this place or that place, whatever. Then we could open the country again quickly, but we're going to need that equipment like yesterday. How do we get them to do that real quick?
They're building it now. They have some of the best minds. The great thing is we have a lot of other companies with great scientists. They can share. We can do it together, and we can overcome this.
All right. Yep. Well, I'm going to task Kevin McCarthy with making that happen. All right. If you can get that done and get millions of these machines, you'll be a rock star. You'll probably be speaker, too. Anyway, thanks for being with us. Kevin McCarthy, 800-941-SEAN.
Who's the bigger threat to America's election security, Russia or China?
In my opinion, it's China. And not just to the election process, but I think across the board, there's simply no comparison. China is a very serious threat to the United States, geopolitically, economically, militarily, and a threat to the integrity of our institutions, given their ability to influence things.
All right, that was the AG Barr on with Laura Ingraham last night. Yeah, the bigger threat is China. Now, look at what China's done to the world. The UK study, 95% of this worldwide pandemic could have been prevented if they didn't lie. But they lied, and they lied over and over and over again. And you got this idiot. You know, we spent $450 million taxpayer dollars for the WHO. China, like $45 million. The director general, you know, there are spewing Chinese propaganda about the virus. Oh, no, everything's fine in China. Everything's fine. And so the president says, you know what, we're going to reevaluate whether we're going to fund the WHO. We've said this for a long time. Look at all the rampant anti-Semitism that's been chronicled over the years in the United Nations. We pay the bulk of that price, too. And at times, anti-Americanism. Well, why? So this guy's an incompetent idiot. And then, well, there'll be more body bags. Well, there's more body bags because they didn't do their job. I think that study's probably pretty accurate. Jason Chaffetz is with us, and he put out a column today. And, you know, you agree with the attorney general, I saw, that China is the biggest threat, long and short term. Quote, you write, China has the resources. They're generally much smarter, much more quiet about how they go about corporate espionage. Espionage are our government and our military. Well, we know all their intellectual property theft. The idea, the person who's been most right about China for the longest period of time has been Donald Trump. Congress, well, I guess fellow Fox News colleague, Jason Chaffetz, why would I insult you and call you a congressman?
Well, thank you. We all have skeletons in our past, and, you know, that's mine.
That's so. A big one for you. By the way, so I'm reading in my buddy Rod Arquette works out in Salt Lake City at our affiliate there, and apparently they're like setting up a system in Salt Lake City that you can report on your neighbor if they're not abiding by government guidelines for social distancing and, you know, if you don't stay in place or whatever the proper term is. Did you hear about that?
I did. Jenny Wilson is our Democratic mayor of Salt Lake County, and it's basically a way to tattletale on your neighbor by filling out this online form. You know, civil liberties, I mean, wow. It's just been totally under attack. And I got to tell you, I find that offensive. I think it's wrong. I think we have totally forgotten about the concept of personal responsibility. And I think it's encouraging us to get more distant with each other and start tattling on each other. I don't like it at all.
Yeah, that's a really bad idea. Just like, for example, I think if you want to open up New York City and not have a horrible rebound that could result in another shutdown, you're going to have widespread testing, but you're going to have it with medical privacy. You're going to have it that people's constitutional rights and civil liberties are not violated. You can't have it if the government's going to create some nutty database on people or location tracking. We can't give up our Constitution in the process, and I'm worried about how we recover economically from all of this as it is. What should the penalty be for China for lying to the world?
Well, look, we have got to stop selling them our debt, and we have got to be able to be self-sufficient without having to rely on them for everything. You know, we got caught with so much of our medical supplies and medicine being produced in China. The best way to do that is do what Donald Trump has been trying to do for the last 3 years, and that is bring that business back to the United States. Bring manufacturing, be self-sufficient. Look at what he did on the energy sector. I mean, that has paid off in dividends in a huge way to be self-sufficient on energy. Well, we better be self-sufficient in our ability to produce products, medical supplies, and other things without having to go to the dirt cheap, you know, labor that was so attractive in China for so long.
And by the way, now that Saudi Arabia and Putin, two hostile regimes from my perspective, are there driving the price of oil down to, they're basically, they did this when the Balkans were open in North Dakota, you know, to the point where it becomes economically impossible for us to produce a barrel of oil at a profit. We end up losing money by producing more oil. And that means high-paying career American jobs are on the line because of whatever insane reasons they're fighting each other over this. Let me ask you about this, because I think there's been a lot of new developments as it relates to the deep state, premeditated fraud, FISA court. And a lot of this is now coming to the surface, but we haven't been able to follow it, but you have been. Give us an update.
No. More and more it's being exposed. I think what Horowitz did a follow-up. He's the Inspector General for the Department of Justice. did a follow-up on each of the FISA submissions that was presented to the court. 100% of them, every single one of them was flawed. Some of them had absolutely no evidence. And again, you and I have talked about this multiple times, Sean. Somehow the court is going to have to stand up for themselves. Why they don't go and put handcuffs on somebody saying, you lied to us and you did it in a premeditated way. You're responsible. You signed the verified document. You presented it.
Okay.
To the court.
Is that going
to
happen? I mean, is now Horowitz only had the ability to work within the confines of the Department of Justice. He had the right, by the way, to make referrals, which he's done numerous times, including Comey and McCabe and others. And nothing seems to happen. We have the Durham investigation still ongoing, and Barr was on with Laura Ingraham last night. Do you foresee grand juries convened and people brought up on charges? Because if I committed premeditated fraud on a court, I'm pretty confident I'd go to jail.
Yeah, with your name, Sean Hannity, I'm pretty sure you'd already.
Well, maybe I should just change it to Jim Comey. He gets away with everything. Or Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, put a big D next to your name, and then you get away with it. I mean, the problem is, I want to have the optimism that Lady Justice will do her job and pursue these things.
But you
I'm
don't.
Pessimistic. But I'm pessimistic because it hasn't happened. We have case after case after case, and the government will not prosecute itself. And you know what? If it goes to court and it loses, it loses. But at least try. Don't tell me that the district in the District of Columbia is too difficult to bring a case and prevail. I'm tired of them saying, well, we can't win this case. If you think you have a solid case, send a message to the deep state, the bureaucracy, that you will be held accountable. And right now, the one that could do it the swiftest is the court itself. That is Justice Roberts. He is ultimately in charge of that court. And he has got to stand up and push them to do the right thing. But they haven't done it either.
Well, it's unbelievable. We better get to the bottom of it. All right, Jason Chaffetz, my fellow Fox News colleague, former congressman. He's reformed, and he's been through rehab, and now he's doing a lot better. We're glad at your progress. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I will tell you, it is so disgusting. The mob and the media, all of this premeditated fraud, FISA court, the basis of those applications, an unverifiable, now debunked dossier that Hillary Clinton paid for. Can you believe it? Can't make it up. They took away Carter Page's civil liberties and rights to spy on a presidential candidate, transition team, and president. All the evidence is in, and nothing happens. How is that? We have and the news media, the mob, they were just Russia, Russia, Ukraine, Ukraine, impeach, impeach. That's it. Now you got these same lunatics in the middle of a pandemic. We can't cover the president's press conferences. Really? In a national emergency. That's how sick it's gotten. You got this, I guess some guy, Chris Hayes, is on before Roswell Rachel Maddow wants to surpass her in the conspiracy theory realm. Now literally Fox is a genuine public health pandemic. I mean, it's just that sick. You know, then floating a conspiracy theory that the death rates were purposely inflated. And the same channel, MSDNC, Trump reopening the economy will depend on whether he's going to win re-election. And then the same channel, you got John Heilman, is the dumbest guy on TV. Tens of thousands of people will die because of Trump's coronavirus incompetence. Really? He's the guy that put the travel ban in effect while you guys were talking about impeaching the president. I mean, this insane conspiracy theory that's being pushed one after another, day in and day out. You know, it's pretty unbelievable. Then you got Dr. Wolf Blitzer. Really, Wolf? You know more than Dr. Wallace, who I've quoted extensively as it relates to hydroxychloroquine? Unreal. You know, we've done, for example, Hannity said it was a hoax. I never said the virus was a hoax, just the opposite. Took it seriously. You know, the first known case in the U.S. was January 21. 6 days later, Anthony Fauci was on my show. I made really clear my concerns. And the next day, we had Dr. Josh Umber in a panel on this program. did it on radio. I did it on TV. Three physicians about the growing threat. I kept warning people late January and February about people that were asymptomatic carriers spreading the virus and the concern that the virus was highly contagious and likely airborne. And, you know, we had it right. Timelines matter. December 30th, that's when they first said, oh, there's a virus in Wuhan province, China, with pneumonia-like symptoms. Yeah. Talking to Dr. Fauci a week later, 10 days after the first known case in the U.S., Donald Trump, yeah, that's when he did the travel ban. The swamp, the mob, the media. Yeah. Well, now quid pro quo Joe supports the xenophobic hysteria, fear mongering, but 2 months, 3 days late, the travel ban. You know, you get the, you know, BuzzFeed in January when we were, oh, don't worry about coronavirus, worry about the flu. All these publications that hate me, Washington Compost, that would be Eric Pop the Pimples paper. You know, headline. How our brains make coronavirus seem scarier than it is. Why we should, on February 3rd, be wary of an aggressive government response to corona. The media praising Andrew Cuomo. Can you imagine if Donald Trump didn't buy 16,000 recommended ventilators? This is Andrew Cuomo. Remember, over 2 months after Donald Trump put the travel ban in effect, this is what Andrew Cuomo was saying on March 2nd. Listen.
Excuse our arrogance as New Yorkers. I speak for the mayor also on this one. We think we have the best healthcare system on the planet right here in New York.
Amen.
So when you're saying what happened in other countries versus what happened here, we don't even think it's going to be as bad as it was in other countries.
Yeah, that was March 2nd. Fake news, CNN, Anderson Cooper. March 4th, if you're freaked all out about the coronavirus, you should be more concerned about the flu. Daily Beast, Washington Post, February 3rd. Why we should be wary of an aggressive government response to coronavirus. President already put the travel ban in effect. Same with all of these people. Politico, coronavirus, quarantine, travel ban could backfire. New York Times, February 5th. Who says it's not safe to travel to China? Well, there's great advice by the New York Times. February 26th, we'll call it the Trump virus. If you're feeling awful, you know who to blame. And I can go on and on. It's just sick. These people are out of their minds. That they accuse us of. They're guilty of. All right, let's get to our phones. Apparently, I guess the briefing has been pushed back. We'll take calls for the final half hour of the program today. Frank is on Long Island, New York. Frank, how are you? We're in the, right in the epicenter going, where you are. How are you doing? How are you holding up?
I'm hanging in there, man. I'm hanging in there. Listen, I want to tell you, great job. I love the president. I think he's the best. And I think he's, I wish he could be president for the rest of my life, to be honest with you. But
You say that, and then, you know, the heads are going to explode all over on the media.
Yeah, let them explode. The media is disgusting, Sean, let me tell you.
They are. You know what? They for 3+ years, I was saying, they're hurting the country. In the middle of a national emergency, they're now also, what they're doing is hurtful to the country. It is not helpful.
Absolutely. I got a question for you.
Okay.
What do you think's going to happen in, say, a month, month or two, Vegas opens up, right? We're going to have to go in there masked up and suited up? I'm not going if that's the case. What the hell's going on?
Look, things are just going to change, especially as long as the possibility of a big rebound exists. Look, we can't shut down the country again. We can't afford it. We don't function that way. So it's we're going to have adjustments. One of them is going to be you're not going to be shaking hands with people like you used to. Another, for interim period of time, there might be a lot more teleworking. There's going to be a lot more testing, especially if you want to open up a city like New York. I guess the answer to your question is, you know, maybe if the hardest businesses to open, as I see it, again, avoiding potential rebound, is the restaurant business. Vegas would be a part of that. The entertainment business, concerts, etc., sporting events, and the airlines. That's complicated. Again, the rebound is when, not if. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. Yeah, we had a squad member, Congresswoman Omar. She literally crosses out a New York Post headline and crossed out the words illegal immigrants and replaced them with American taxpayers. They want to change election laws, the Democrats. They want a mail-in system. Well, there's a little problem with the mail-in system is it opens us up to even more fraud and abuse than any other system I can think of. Well, who's going to be... How do we verify that the person is the person they say it is? It's hard. Now, there are certain checks and balances for absentee ballot, but that's where the Democrats' heads are. Rather than pass a bill cleanly, no, we got to fund the Kennedy Center for the Arts, the National Endowment for the Humanities, the National Endowment for the Arts. Then we're willing to withhold monies that are desperately needed for American workers and small businesses and hospitals and big businesses. That's who they are. They're never going to change. Apparently, Andrew Cuomo has said again he's not running for president. But it looks like now with Bernie out of the way. Now, Bernie got out of this race, and it's pretty interesting. He gets out, but he's keeping his delegates and kind of encouraging them to vote and saying that, yeah, we want to influence the Democratic Party platform. Or if Joe Biden decides to bail, as some have been speculating, I have no idea if that's true, but I don't think he is. I think Joe Biden is their guy as of now, unless we see something different. He did a virtual town hall yesterday after Bernie dropped out of the race. He assumed the mantle of his party as the presumptive nominee, and he suggested one-time rival Kamala Harris might play a big role in his campaign moving forward. Now he's said it's going to be a woman as his vice presidential running mate. That he has said. Okay, that's fine. By the way, James Carville is saying that, well, first, Republicans will kill people to stay in power. I mean, how do you even begin to answer that?
What we got to be careful about is it mucking around with just voting, and that they're going to try it because Trump, everybody, all Republicans admitted we can't win if everybody votes. And so my kind of mission here in the short term is to sound the alarm to say Mitch McConnell and the Supreme Court, they're going to do everything they can to hold on to power. And Speaker Pelosi and Leader Schumer, we got to dig in and make sure these states have funding to conduct these elections and to put pressure on them to make sure they're done fairly. This thing in Wisconsin was one of the most awful things I've ever seen in my life. You know, just go you the extent that what they will go to hold on to power. And it was all about one Supreme Court seat in Wisconsin. They will kill people to stay in power, literally.
Kill them. Kill them. Remember, it was the Democrats that withheld the aid from American workers, hospitals that needed the money for over a week so they can fund the arts, change immigration laws and change voting laws that, oh, yeah, anybody could deliver it to the mailbox as long as it's sealed. Other people's mail-in ballots. No, not a good idea. We actually need to check and make sure that that person is really registered to vote. Just that would be called following the rule of law, which apparently I guess they don't want. Anyway, so we have that with Carville also saying, yeah, that if there's a level playing field, he predicts a Democratic wipeout. Why? Because of the good response of the president with the coronavirus, his response with the coronavirus. So it's getting interesting every day on that front. And, you know, poor Bernie. But he's staying in it. There's no doubt about it. The whole idea of mail-in balloting would be dangerous. Look, Texas took up legislation back in 2017 after mail-in ballot irregularities affected the city council elections in Dallas. Texas Tribune reported that Saturday's legislative movement on the matter comes amid an investigation. Mail-in ballot irregularities affecting city council races in Dallas, where 700 suspicious ballots were sequestered after the county's DA received an off-the-charts number of complaints from voters. And many people, especially in West Dallas, said they received mail-in ballots that they didn't request. And they feared someone else voted in their place. Yeah, that would be something that would be very difficult to check. Let's see. ProPublica pointed out, there's bipartisan consensus that mail-in ballots are the form of voting most vulnerable to fraud. 2005 commission led by President Jimmy Carter, James Baker III, concluded that these ballots remain the largest source of potential voter fraud. Of course they want to change it. They don't, you know, of course they do. Why would they want that? You know, Nikki Haley said something in an op-ed. You know, I look at Andrew Cuomo's epic fail, de Blasio's epic fail in New York. I mean, it's kind of sad. I mean, we did, you know, we tried in this program to reach out. I said to Governor Cuomo, I want to work with him. I want to help the people in New York any way I can. Then he has to run out there. Then we discover he turned down the recommendation of his own task force. Peak week, by the way, this is peak week in New York. Now, thank God we didn't need, the predictions were off dramatically. Thank God. Because if we did need the 17,000 ventilators, we probably would have come close, but none of them because of him. It's bad enough. Not only did Donald Trump build the hospitals, now he put the personnel in the hospitals. Got a 1,000-bed Navy ship, the largest hospital in the country, the Javits Center. Neither one was supposed to take COVID-19 patients. Both are. It actually works out because they're taking some of the overflow. New Jersey is also hit hard, and they're moving some of those patients, as I understand it, into New York. But, you know, Haley's right. This is the governor's responsibility, but Trump's doing it. All those supplies, everything that we know, the president's providing it. Anyway, what else we got here? Oh, there, you know, one thing, I was going to go through this. I don't think I have time, but there's like really scary headlines. And then there's weird headlines. Virus may spark devastating global condom shortage. Yahoo.com. I'm like, really? We have this guy on TV tonight that's become this former New York Times reporter challenging this whole narrative that we've all, you know, overreached on the virus. Alec Berenson is his name. He puts up interesting data. I'm going to find out what that's about. Then you like read some of the UK papers. Terrifying video shows how a single cough can spread a cloud of coronavirus across a supermarket that lingers for minutes. Another UK paper, the Daily Star, only 6% of coronavirus cases actually being detected, claims chilling study. I mean, then they're talking about the president's team in Politico. They want a national coronavirus surveillance system. Okay, I haven't heard that from anybody, but any whatever. New Jersey town resorts to talking drones to, or using drones, I guess, to enforce social distancing. The New Jersey drones with voice and siren capabilities will play as a warning from the mayor. Okay. California sheriff warns people that he can arrest and fine people $1,000 if they're not wearing their mask in public. They're setting up a system in Salt Lake City for neighbor to rat out neighbor if they aren't socially distancing, apparently, and or if they're not abiding by the rules that you can only go to certain places at certain times. That's a little scary. Another Daily Mail, UK papers. I mean, these headlines are nuts. Suicides in England soar to a record level with 1,400 recorded in 3 months, up a quarter in 2 years, with 75% of the victims male and biggest rise among men. I hope to God that's not true. And you got people using masks to commit crimes. You got the sucker punch of a New York police officer. Got a Sun article in the UK. Pastor says his parishioners would rather die than not go to church, and he refuses to stop services during the lockdown. All right, to our phones we go. Let's say hi to Cindy is in Florida. Hey, Cindy, how are you? At least you got nicer weather.
Oh, yeah, it's really nice here today.
What's going on?
I just wanted to... I don't really understand this thing about Fauci and the not liking the hydrochloroquine.
I don't think it's not that he doesn't like it. Fauci's old school. Now, look, he spent his entire career doing these topics. He worked hard to save lives his whole career. So I have nothing but respect. But he wants the clinical study that goes on for a year, year and a half. We don't have time. Every country's using it.
Too.
Yeah. What's that?
I mean, that's. I totally agree. There's no time for all of that, especially when you don't have any negative reports. Now, if you had some negative stuff going on, I might agree with him more.
Well, that's why we were paying such positive. Close attention to it. I mean, there are people on TV saying it is dangerous. It is reckless. Okay, according to the foremost professional, this guy, Dr. Wallace, I won't read it again, it's safe. Tens of millions of doses in 42 years of practice. This is his practice, rheumatoid arthritis and lupus. No patient of mine ever hospitalized. He said the risk of what they are dosing out for people that have COVID-19, he said the risk, his words, are nil, except for a potential allergic rash or upset stomach. That's it. So the risk is not there. And, you know, we have a lot more than anecdotal evidence showing that it works. So it's up to people to decide with the consultation of their doctor.
That's what my doctor said. My doctor said it's been around for a long time. I take it for something called morphia, which is...
Listen, there's about 12 other medicines they're looking at. This is the one that is now being used worldwide. We have the dosages that we need. Look, I know what I would do. I'm not a doctor.
Right.
Consult your doctor.
I
would use it in a heartbeat.
Mine said it's safe. There's hardly any side effects. And I said, well, is there any reason not to take it? And he said, no, not really. He said, you do have to get your eyes checked every 6 months.
That's at heavy doses, long periods of time, usually. But look, all this has to be done with a doctor. Also, if you have heart issues or arrhythmia, you got to be more careful. But again, that's why you bring your doctor into the equation.
Right.
But, you know, but for them to say, you know, Dr. Wolf Blitzer, really? Dr. Humpty Dumpty. I'm going to listen to these idiots that are just, again, they've politicized it all. And I tell you, they don't really care. It's all about, I hate Trump. Don't cover the press conference. I hate Trump. I hate Trump. It's even in the middle of a national pandemic. It's unbelievable. All right, you doing well otherwise, Cindy? You hanging in there? You're social distancing and everything?
Oh, pretty good. We're in Florida. I got my dogs, my mom, my husband, my grandkids. I'm still seeing them, but they live about a block away, so...
Well, this is the time we could take care of grandma, grandpa, mom, and dad. We want to take care of them, okay?
Yep.
All right, hang in there. Jeff in Minnesota. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Well, sir, good to talk to you today. Just a couple of things that I wanted to run at you. Earlier in the show, you had talked about opening up the restaurants and getting the airlines going. Why can't we let restaurants let customers back into their store but only do reservations? We still do carry out, let the fast food places leave their drive-thrus open, but restaurants, just take reservations. Let the restaurant owners and managers control the number of people that are coming into their restaurants. And as far as the airlines go, you know, we have a number of airplanes sitting right now, not doing anything. Maybe the airlines need to take another look at how many people they're cramming into airplanes. Make the seats bigger, open the rows up a little bit. Do we need 5 flights a day to, you know, Nashville? Like, cut the fat a little bit, you know, take another look at how they're doing things to get people back flying and eating in restaurants again.
It's just harder because you can't screen. Look, again, if we have, and every doctor so far I've talked to, yeah, there's always the risk of this rebound, and they're all kind of, it's consensus that it's going to be when there's going to be a rebound. Now, you know, geographic areas were less populated, less densely populated. The challenges are less severe. But a city like New York City, the financial capital of the country, it's complicated. And you got to figure it out. And it's going to partly be teleworking. It's going to, I think it all comes down to testing at a massive level. But it's got to honor people's patient privacy. It's got to honor civil liberties. It's got to honor constitutional rights. It's got to be handled the right way. No databases. I don't need, you know, we don't need to go down that road where some people would instantaneously take us. And we just got to believe in the majority of citizens are going to be honorable. And if you get it, you just, you know, distance yourself at home and quarantine yourself at home as people have been doing.
And that's the other thing. The things in New York don't apply to the people here in Minnesota. Like, I understand people want to be safe and we need to social distance, but, you know, the numbers from the government were downgraded, as we've been talking about, and our governor came on TV and we're sheltered in place for another 25 more days. And it's
but in 21 days, it's you know, it's the end of the 45 days. And
what I'm wondering is are we going to see governors and states that, you know, there's a whole lot of, I hate Trump. You know, impeach, Russia, stormy. And
well, they're doing it now with COVID-19.
Probably watching you on TV, and we're asking, what's the next thing they're going to do? And are we going to start seeing these states using this as an excuse to tank our economy and make our president look bad?
Well, look, here's the thing. We have to open the country up, but we got to figure out how to do it as safely as possible. I think the answer is in this Abbott test. And no, I don't have any interest in Abbott. That'll be the next question I get. I hate stocks. There's my answer. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Dr. Oz takes your calls tomorrow. The great one, Mark Levin, Lindsey Graham, Dr. Oz, Senator Kennedy. See you tomorrow. Thanks for being with us. See you tonight.